they're speakers, authors, and real-life rock stars, bringing you life-changing thoughts that rock, taking conversation all the way to 11.
Most shows only go to 10.
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? These go to 11.
This is Thoughts That Rock. Now, here are your hosts, Jim Knight and Brant Menswear.
It's the jitterbug. It's the jitterbug. You put the boom boom into my heart. You all know you put the boom boom in our hearts. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on Thoughts That Rock, the podcast that is about exchanging two pieces of life-changing advice squeezed into about half an hour. And to our solo listener in Russia, your bare-chested president rides a magnificent steed.
Fake news. Fake news. Fake news alert. Hey, listen, we know how busy you are, and I know you've got a lot of things going on in your life, and it's probably really tough to even squeeze out 30 minutes, but that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to give you some things that could amp up your life, and hopefully those little pieces will help you out, regardless of what you're doing right now. You could be floating in an inner tube or camping out under the stars or removing all the cash from a joint account. It doesn't really matter. We just want to be the 30 minutes that you look forward to every week.
This podcast supports Cannonball Kids Cancer,
yep,
an incredible nonprofit providing options for kids that have run out of options. CKC funds research for families that have been told there's nothing else that can be done. They go out, find the research, fund the research, and literally bring hope to those that are feeling hopeless. We are incredibly proud to make sure that everything we do here supports the work they do.
For sure. Now, just as a final reminder, whatever format you're listening to the podcast, if you like the show, and we hope that you do, we would love it, absolutely love it, if you would just take a moment to drop down and give us not only a rating, but actually write a review. Believe it or not, it does help for people tuning in, and that'll just help support Cannonball Kids Cancer a little bit more.
Yep. No question. So if there's anything else that we can do, I don't know, Jim, what possibly we could do.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, maybe make a ham sandwich.
Here we go.
Or maybe some tacos. I don't know. All I know is that when you hear this music, it's time for business.
It is time for business.
It's business time.
We are so excited today to have on the show one of my dear friends. I think we're probably going on about 15 years here, which is Amanda Height, who is the co-founder and CEO of BTC Revolutions. That's Be the Change Revolutions, which is a media agency based in D.C. And I've known Amanda, like I said, for quite a while. I think the first time that I heard of her, I knew that she was already in a leadership role. I want to say she was probably in a restaurant franchisee marketing department for a while. And, you know, she's sort of been in those sort of leadership positions since I think she was 16 years old. But it was in 2008 when she really got the entrepreneur bug. And the story goes, and Amanda can help me, you know, correct if I get this wrong, but I think you had something like $64 in your pocket and cashed in on your savings and your 401k to really start your own business, which was a recruiting company. I think that's how we met, right? The first time?
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as I've known her, you know, Amanda has just had a passion for helping businesses out. But even more than that, and where I think I fell madly in love with her, you know, from a business standpoint, is just her political activism and her fight for social justice and some very specific causes that are dear to her and her upbringing. And I've just always known her to be very smart and dynamic and great keynote speaker, huge social media influencer. And you've been featured in the Huffington Post and Entrepreneur Magazine and Nation's Restaurant News. And I could go on, just the accolades keep coming with Amanda. But I do know that the cool thing in these last 2 years, Be the Change Revolutions, which helps companies really maximize their impact on the business and society by getting them to think differently about social media and marketing and the workplace engagement. But you've been really recognized. I think, you know, Inc. Magazine, right, has listed you on one of the fastest growing private companies in the U.S. You're in the top 500. Is that correct?
Yeah, 2016 to 2017.
Man, that's unbelievable. Unbelievable. But, you know, I could go on and talk about how fantastic and all the great stuff. And maybe we'll even talk about some of the charitable causes that that you wrap yourself around. And I've been lucky enough to help support you. But, Amanda, we're just so giddy that you are joining us on Thoughts That Rock. So welcome.
Yeah, thanks. 15 years. I feel pretty lucky.
Yeah.
I feel like there's some kind of anniversary we should celebrate. Is there like a term for that, or do we get like a watch or something?
Yeah. You know, what do you get at 15? Yeah. Is it,
I don't know.
Is it silver? Is it gold?
I've only known aluminum. I've only known him for like 5 and I'm already gray. So I don't know how you've lasted as long as you have, Amanda, but that's amazing.
Oh, that's great. We've got lots of good stories.
We use a lot of hair color. We're going to talk hair color products today.
Yes.
Actually, I don't know if you remember this or not. I mean, the first time we met was at we were at an industry conference. It was CHART, the Council of Hotel Restaurant Trainers. And Brent, you should see, there's probably about 350, 400 people that go to this conference, but we're in a hospitality suite. It's at night. And I'm talking to a couple of my friends, and I look over, and leaning up against the back of a couch was this person who also had spiky hair and had sort of this grin on her face and had a drink in her hand. And, you know, at some point I moved over there to her, and she just kept, we were just staring at each other. It was hilarious. And she goes, I don't know if you remember this line, Amanda, but she goes, I don't know you, but I feel like we should know each other. It was so cool. It was a great moment. And it was, I don't know, we were probably talking about hair care products. And since then, we've done some pretty cool stuff together, some in the industries, and sometimes we're the sort of co-keynote speakers on an event. And geez, we've hung out everywhere from beaches to wine country, from Kentucky to Ethiopia. So you don't get that varied with some friends. And I've just been so happy to know you.
I can tell you the secrets of what Jim's hair does in weather in Ethiopia.
Yes, yes. Water, hats, and Ethiopia, Africa hot.
I wondered if he like cut the tops of the hats off so that his hair could actually come out, almost like a visor, like a big, thick visor.
Hey, I actually have pictures of us hanging out in a village in the middle of nowhere where I put a bandana on, and it does look like I'm wearing one of these little visors with the fake hair. But yeah, it's the real deal. So we're just so thrilled to be here, and honestly, it's you know, probably a little bit different than other podcasts if you've ever seen them, where it kind of goes through your entire history. And I know we're going to weave some of that in there, but we really wanted to get right to the heart of you sharing some awesome pieces of advice. And I know you've got many to choose from, but I'm going to throw it over to you. What is your thought that rocks?
Thoughts that rock, number one.
Yeah, it was tough to pick one when you asked me this earlier, but I have to say, because I think it all starts here, being the authentic, unapologetic you, and kind of when you embrace that, everything else starts to fall in place. And I really do believe passionately that the first step in really being able to realize anyone's true talents, potential, to be able to live a more fulfilling life, to get acceptance from others, is really the self-acceptance and really unapologetically embracing being who you are. So I believe that as us as individuals, and also us as just, you know, as humanity in general, the more we can expand our capacity to let others be exactly who they are, and the more we can kind of accept ourselves, like we'll be a better world to live in.
Yeah. And I know you probably will disagree and say that this has been maybe an evolution for you. Many people say that, but honestly, ever since I've known you, that sort of has been your mantra. I'm glad you picked this one, because you're right. This is probably the heart of your whole entire life, but I've always known you to stick your neck out and say, this is who I am, you know, I am unapologetic about that. Do you agree? Or do you think this is, you know, changed and evolved with you over the years?
Oh, no, I mean, I definitely, you know, I'm, whether it's been an unpopular political opinion or, you know, maybe I like a Justin Bieber song, right? I've never,
this podcast is over
and done. Yeah. And we're finished.
Yeah. So I've never been too shy about that. But, you know, I think that you evolve into that. I always say, like, I love kids and old people.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we're all born really authentic. And you're around kids, especially when they just start talking, and you just watch them explore the world with wonder. And they're so just real and haven't quite been jaded yet. But as we kind of grow up and go through life, we start to, try to be, gain acceptance and approval from our parents and then our teachers and then our, other kids at school. And then we're in the workplace. And, by the time we're, adults, you hear people say, well, I feel lost. I'm not sure who I am. And I say kids and old people because kids are just so full of wonder, and old people have just lived long enough to, not care.
Not care.
Yeah. And so everybody else in between, I'm kind of, iffy about. But, and so I think I went through a similar journey with myself where, Jim, I don't know if you've known me for 15 years. I don't know if you've ever been able to see any of the pictures of me during middle school. With
no.
A really, really bad, we weren't hair twins then. Well, maybe we were. You had long hair too, but I had a really bad perm, Aquanet bangs. I wore dresses and carried around a flowered, a patterned Bible cover all the time. And I certainly was not myself. I felt very awkward. And it was, and it wasn't until, and it was probably more, I'd say when I turned 18 and started kind of becoming more independent on my own outside. And I just kind of eventually, I think I looked around and saw that the people in my life, many of the people in my life that I was, trying so hard to please and be a different person to different people. I just realized these folks aren't really happy themselves and aren't really sure who they are. And so as I started just, kind of owning that, I think you see that other people, the more we model that for others, other people feel it's safe to be the same. People really kind of crave, they want to be who they are. And I do believe that eventually it will take you, it'll attract the things in your life that are, that you're meant to do and be, and the people that you're meant to be around. And, so it's not that it's always easy, because sometimes it might push some people away, but arguably, the people you'll surround yourself with that do also accept you are good. So anyways, I could talk all day about that, but
we love that.
You have
20 minutes.
Good.
Well, first off, you need to send one of those early pictures of you. We're going to put that in the show notes if people want to see an
awful
early Aquanet bang Amanda.
I got a video of me singing in a soprano voice, falsetto, whatever. Wind Beneath My Wings in that perm.
Oh, nice.
Nice. It was bad.
The full Bette Midler. Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think, what you just said, I think is really, and maybe this helped you get into this entrepreneurship lifestyle too. I mean, do you think that maybe you could see a group of people that maybe weren't their authentic self, and here you were wanting to be able to do things the way that you wanted to do it, and even in your work life, you're saying, listen, I may as well just be able to own my own story, own my own business, make the decisions. You surrounded yourself with a bunch of really good, smart people too. But I don't know. I think maybe this is what happens with entrepreneurs, that they get so frustrated with not just the status quo, but wanting to do things the way that they want to do, whether it's the way they look or act or behave or think or whatever it is. Do you think that helped push you sooner into that entrepreneurship lifestyle?
In part, and I think because part of who my authentic self is I've always just had this really insatiable desire to do more meaningful, purposeful work.
Yeah.
And I think because that's such a part of who I am, I needed to be true to that and honor that. And then just in the role that I was in corporate America, I didn't feel like, what I was able to do there was enough, and I wanted more. And I do think that it does help you though navigate, in entrepreneurship, navigate just kind of the trials that come with that, and things like differentiating, right, in a market.
Yeah.
The more that, because a lot of times the brand also takes on, and I love, Jim, you talk about this all the time about how the culture is really its people.
Yeah.
And how it takes shape of that. And so, I think that. So I think it reflects and impacts it in that way.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, the other way I'd say that it does is, as I grew up gay in a very Southern Baptist, deeply, and in the 80s and 90s where, it was still a crime in a lot of places to be. And so I think when you go through that level of adversity, just trying to be who you are and how you were born, I think what it does is it gives you, in dealing with as much change as I did, I really think that set me up to be able to take on a lot of challenges that you experience. And it gives you a lot of, you learn to love yourself unconditionally.
Yeah.
And I think that obviously knowing a bit of your story, Amanda, and knowing that, even how you just described, kids are authentically who they are. They don't know any better. And as we sort of get older and start to conform to what society is pushing on us or our families or our friends or whatever it might be that the outside influence is that starts to say, this is who you should be, maybe not who you are. What I love about your thought is this idea of not just being authentic, but the unapologetic you. And I'm wondering, was there a moment for you when you realized that you didn't have to apologize anymore? And I'm just curious, what was that? Was it an epiphany? Was it something that sort of gradually came, or what? When did you sit there and say, you know what? I'm not going to apologize anymore for who I am or who I desire to be.
You know, I think that it was definitely it was definitely a little later in life for me as far as the unapologetic part, because. But I think what it was, it got to a point where I just really realized, like, I other people aren't going to love me. I'm not going to be able to really make the impact that I want to make unless I can fully embrace myself. And it came to a point where this unapologetic, it was just there are just some things in my life that are not up for debate. And who I am is just one of them. And it's and then when you start to see how things take shape after that, and how a lot of times you'll find that people actually have a lot more respect for you because, again, all of us, there are some ways that all of us are different and that we all just want to be more of who we are and want, to live in a world and in an environment and communities where people just kind of accept us for who we are. And so I think that it starts just like any other kind of boundaries in life, like you just say that unapologetically, I'm gonna love myself and accept myself for who I am, and to demand that kind of treatment from others as well.
I think it's also when we think about, at least for me, when I think of unapologetically and for myself, being in my I spent a good portion of my time from say 20 to 40 just engrossed in the church world as well, and that's sort of like an added pressure always, and you sort of coming out of that Baptist background as well makes it really tough. But I look at it and I go, we can still attack the world with love, from a position of love. In a way that isn't, we're not trying to be offensive. We're not trying to hurt anyone's feelings. We're not saying, screw you, this is who I am. We're saying, you know what? I just don't want to hide anymore. I just want to embrace who I am, and the people who love me should want that too. Right?
Oh yeah.
I think that is when we think of apologizing, I think we're apologizing because we've hurt somebody's feelings, but that's not what this is about.
Right.
This is about just being able to own who you are, who you were meant to be, who you were made to be, and doing it in a way that still allows you to have the impact that you desire. And I think that's been your entire life. I mean, you go back and look at all of the things that you've accomplished over your life, all of the organizations that you devote your time to, your efforts, your charity to. And I think that speaks volumes, that's sort of the position that you've taken is, I'm going to love people through it.
And I think the other important lesson in that is, yes, it's for, your own, confidence and ability to, really fulfill your potential and meaning in life. But, also equally as important, I think, is that, you know, we allow others to do the same, because and we create more of a society that can, I really believe we start to get to some of our greatest issues are a lot of times at the root of it is people's fear of difference and the other, mm-hmm. and not understanding other people's experiences. And when we're all better as a society, if everybody is living up to more of their true potential. And, you know, there's a quote, and I think I saw it in a Netflix doc. Was it called The Net? I think. But it's difference is a strength. Our diversity is a strength. Difference is a teacher.
Yeah.
If you fear difference, you learn nothing. And I think there's something about, you know, also trying to learn more and understand the experiences of others, and by allowing other people to kind of be who they are, we're better off as a society. And I loved your point on love. It is truly the prescription to most that is ill in the world.
There's a line in a Bruce Coburn song that I love that says, he's going to kick the darkness until it bleeds daylight. Right. And I think that's just so incredible.
I love that.
Wow.
When I was working at Hard Rock, actually, when I first started there, I just knew that these people that worked for a brand, it was probably the most interesting collection of humans I'd ever seen on the planet. And one thing that I loved about them was the fact that they relished diversity. They relished individuality. You know, that identity for them was, you know, excuse the pun, it was really instrumental. And it allowed people, I think, not only to accept themselves and sort of be on this island with a bunch of other crazy people, the island of misfit toys, right? But it started to attract other people that were different. It attracted, I think, customers and guests that said, hey, look, these people look and behave and act like me. And there weren't a lot of companies at that time that were doing. I think more are starting to figure it out. But, you know, I loved also that the organization that I was there for over 2 decades, they would emblazon these mottos on the wall, like all is one, take time to be kind, save the planet. I mean, these are things before they were, you know, buzzwords and popular back in the 80s.
Right.
And so you can't have that stuff on the wall and in some training manual and then not do it. It's liar, liar, pants on fire. So,
yeah,
you know, I think I'm one of these people who I came to the organization maybe a little bit different, a little bit jaded. You know, I was a little bit more in corporate America, and then I got to rediscover myself by hanging out with people that were just so unique. And I don't know, I love that, number one, about you. And you, Brian, you may not know this, but Amanda really was kind of one of the early adopters of not just Twitter, but social media. I couldn't figure it out. Like, I'm looking at it going, I don't care what you're having for lunch, right? And Amanda's screaming about the power of social media and how you can, you know, change governments and move, you know, mountains. And, you know, the fact that you can be your authentic self, and you had a platform, you still have a platform, you can now inspire others. I think it just makes you more beautiful. My crush on you grows every single day.
Well, it's mutual.
There's a love fest going on over here.
Yeah, for sure. Always.
Well, I think it's a perfect transition, because we're going to talk next about happiness, right? And this is really where our thought is going to come into play.
Thoughts that rock, number two.
And our thought is this, and this came across, I read this once from Michael J. Fox, and I think it's just, especially knowing his situation, it's incredible. But the thought is this: my happiness grows in direct proportion to my acceptance and in inverse proportion to my expectations. And
wow.
Yeah, right? I mean, just knowing what he's battling and sort of his last 20 years of his life, And I think that it's such a transferable thought about acceptance. You know, our happiness is sort of facing this tug of war between acceptance and expectations. And for me, acceptance is all about truth, right? So whatever your truth is, that's what you need to accept. Whether that's who you are individually, whether that's a situation going on at work, whether it's a part of a relationship that you are in, the acceptance of truth is truly in direct proportion to how happy you have the ability to be, right? But yet, we allow expectations, whether they're our own or our friends or our families, to sort of skew the balance so that the chances of us ever really truly being happy become infinitely more difficult. And I think that I would imagine you've experienced this multiple times in your life, Amanda, but for me, it has rung true, especially as I've gotten older. It has rung true over and over and over again in my life. Has that been an experience with you?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that, every so often I have to like just put myself in check when I'm feeling, you know, really down, or, you know, I find myself maybe sorting negative more often, and, you know, and just pause and say, you know, I make myself like write gratitude list,
yeah,
and remind myself all the great things there are, because I do think that, a lot of times we're aware that a lot of that anger and anxiety stems from its unmet expectations.
Yep.
And so, you know, and sometimes just putting back in, I love that. I love the way you put it about, just kind of embracing and accepting your truth. And that's, but yeah, I've definitely felt that in all contexts of life, really.
Well, I know I was laughing with Jim as we were looking for a show image for you. I'm like, she's like, she's got this smirk about her that is, that is like every picture I found, I'm like, there it is again. She has got the most famous smirk that I think I've ever seen. But I think that again, it's one of those things with our happiness that the sooner that you can, first of all, getting to the root of what your truth is, most people never take the time. They're too afraid that they're going to disappoint someone. They're too afraid of what the truth might actually be and what that means for them in their life and the potential pain that might come from whatever that truth is. But if they truly would understand that it's only in accepting that, that they're ever going to actually experience the type of happiness that they should, I think we'd find this world to be a lot better place. And it's funny to me that, especially in the political climate that we find ourselves in these days, this acceptance and expectations tug of war, I don't know that it's ever been more prominent, or more difficult fight. And I think that, my biggest concern, my biggest issue comes from, there are so few people that have actually taken the time to determine their truth, their core values, what matters most to them. And instead, they are focusing on sort of this other side of an expectation of what the media says is truth, or what the American population wants or deserves or needs or whatever that might be. And it's why I have such a difficult time talking to people about politics, is because I want to have a values-based conversation, and they can only give me an emotionally charged conversation. And being in sort of, you've been in this realm for a long time, where do you think we are? Do you think that this is part of the struggle of this acceptance versus expectations and values versus, you know, emotions is what's got us into a bit of a pickle these days?
Well, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about that. So I think that, I think in part, you know, it's kind of deliberate, you know, and I'm going to use some strong language, not inappropriate, but strong language,
yeah.
Kind of a psychological warfare going on. And definitely social media has been weaponized to a big extent with that. But I think when politics becomes kind of propaganda, from any corner, right? Of where they stand, and then you have people who start to, and I think this is back to like embracing the authentic, unapologetic you. Too often, I think we're defining ourselves by labels and brands and titles, and you know, different. You know, it's so much of this polarization is really connected to identity, and it's not just on one side; it's on all sides of it, right?
Right.
So. If you kind of look at some of the stats on that, people are, you know, really part of who they are in their mind. They've connected it and tied it to these identities. And so I'm a Republican or a Democrat, that this and this. And to your point, and then I just think that the way the system is that, you know, each side uses the worst examples of the other side, right?
Right.
To put up as a picture and a face of who this is. We talk past each other. There's a lot of propaganda. It's really like low levels. You know, it's all really systematic. And I think that when you take the kind of politicians out of it, and you put families at a dinner table, or you put people in a community together at a table, and if we don't ask the questions that have like the trigger words in it, right? And we ask the questions differently. I forget who it was that did a poll or did a study not too long ago. And they asked a lot of like kind of the hot button topics, but they asked them using different language. It was just the way that they reframed the questions and how closely aligned. Actually, we were more closer than apart, mm-hmm. Than if you ask them in a different way than they're used to hearing it. So I think that a lot of that is this. And I think like one of the examples was, do you think that or what do you think, what percentage of the nation do you think, or what percentage of the total income do you think the wealthiest, whatever percent own? And Democrats and Republicans both answered the same on that. And then they said, how much do you think it should be? And they both answered the same on that. And so they started asking like, just what should we do about it again, but not putting like politically charged language in there. And so right. But I think what happens is, we're being used by people that don't have the best of intentions,
sure.
Really kind of the other that a lot of people are maybe some more naturally afraid of. That's being pitted against us, and so people like will fear what they don't know.
Yep.
And then when they're hearing the worst extreme versions, right? That usually aren't true. So, anyways, I could talk a lot about that, but this is where I think we just need to. If we were more open to wanting to understand others, mm-hmm. and wanting to understand their experiences and wanting to, and look at that as some way that we can learn and collaborate more and come up with like real solutions, we could do that versus kind of the trajectory that it's on now to just kind of further polarize and push us further to the edges.
Yeah. I feel like it's, we're in a battle over the definition of truth.
For sure, yeah.
And that's probably the, at least for me, speaking to both sides of the fence, is that their version of the truth is their version of the truth, but whether it's fact or actual truth is always up for debate. And I think that's, we get lost in that argument, unfortunately, and lose what you just discussed, which is we're actually closer than we are further apart, but everything sort of conspiring against us, these expectations of this is how I should be, this is what we should do as a party, this is what we should have as a country, these are the things we should fight for, really puts, it's interesting in that, I wrote a book on change last year, and in the studying of what it's like for us to deal with change, one of the things that we talked about a lot, and it's something that Brené Brown has focused on in some of her specials more recently, is this element of shame. And, when we allow others' expectations to determine our truth, we allow a level of shame to enter our lives that really do some significant damage. And it's because we are not focused on our truth. We are not focused on accepting who we are, our unapologetic, authentic self. We are focused on what somebody else wants. And we used an example of, smoking, obviously, everybody knows smoking is bad for you at this point, right? Who on the planet does not know that smoking is not good for your health? But if you are, a 65, 70-year-old person and you're smoking and you've smoked your entire life, and now you've got your kids or grandkids who are like, don't do this. This is unhealthy for you. And your family is reaching out saying, don't you want to see your granddaughter graduate from high school? Don't you want to see your grandson get married? And the truth, as hard as it is to hear, might be that they don't care. And that is their truth that they really want to live with, but the expectations of everybody put on them doesn't allow them to ever embrace and accept that truth. And so they live this life in shame, which leads to anxiety and depression and everything else that we end up dealing with. And if you look at this country right now, I don't know how, I mean, we are a country filled with anxiety and depression. I mean, suicide rates are at an all-time high. It is absolutely insane what we are facing as an organization, as a as a country now, as organizations, as companies, as families, as communities. And I don't know that there is better advice than what you've already said, which is let's spend some time being our authentic, unapologetic selves and finding common ground somewhere in between.
Yeah, it really is. Our differences are really the teacher that we need.
Yes.
And I think that a lot of that anxiety will start to fade if people are just talking to each other, right? Because a lot of the anxiety that you carry, that they feel this way about me, or I'm afraid of this, or, you know, and if we genuinely show a good faith effort to understand people and not try to shame them into, you know, I mean, just, but if we really have a desire to understand others and their experiences, you know, it will alleviate some of that. And it's tough. I mean, I'm deeply conflicted because I'm in a space right now that I have a love-hate relationship with. You know, mm-hmm. I've met some of the most amazing people on the planet because of social media. I met my wife. I met, we found our little puppy cat Prince on Facebook. There's been a lot of good that's come from it. I started a company. Been able to do a lot of good for a lot of good causes, but I also, it is the thing that keeps me up at night is the damaging negative impacts at scale that this space really has on us psychologically, and how it's designed to just arrest and capture our attention, and it's really designed to provoke the worst of our human instincts, not the best of them.
Right.
And so, you know, our confirmation bias to our kind of outrage to our, and so, as we kind of get, and it's, I say psychological warfare because it really is what's happening digitally. And so I think that, you know, these digital detoxes are good. When you start getting to that place where you feel the rage and the, you know, and then get out and, you know, talk to other people or do something, you know, take action, you know, offline, that can help, help do that. But again, it always goes back to this core though. If we were just letting people be who they are, more and try to understand and let that, those different, our differences be, you know, our teacher, we'd be way better off.
You're like the perfect case study for what we're talking about, the happiness growing in direct proportion. Your love hate meter probably is like every day on, off, on.
Oh, yeah.
Off.
Yeah.
I will tell you, Brant, you will not see a single smirk on Amanda's face if you'd have been at her wedding. You, Amanda, you were beaming the whole time. It was the greatest event ever. I mean, our friends now, Kathleen Wood and I, talk about that event all the time. You were just so happy. And actually what I wanted to do just before we sort of wrap up here, I know that you have so many causes that you focused on, but I think, you know, part of being the authentic you and also your direct proportionate, you know, focusing on happiness is when you are giving to others. And I think about, you know, probably because that's the industry we grew up, the hunger related stuff like supporting No Kid Hungry or basically any organization that's focused on helping people get food. Can you talk a little bit about some of the work that you do with that? And if you wanted to talk about, you know, this small group of influencers that we sort of created called the Changers of Commerce.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Any opportunity to do that. We did that at our wedding too. It's the most redemptive day of my life, but we also wanted to, you know, use that occasion to kind of point to some of these great causes. And
you
so
did.
Some of mine are, as you mentioned, No Kid Hungry, that's focused on ending childhood hunger in America. And so through the work that they've done over the years, have been able to really reduce childhood hunger by like 30%, which is extraordinary.
Yep.
And then nokidhungry.org. And we, BTC, we work with No Kid Hungry on some social stuff, on some advocacy stuff. Another one is Refugees International. You know, there are some really just horrific and terrible things happening around the world, whether it's, you know, from violence and wars to people fleeing from like climate crises. And, you know, their Refugees International really brings a spotlight and raises awareness to some of those things that are happening, and really humanizes the stories of these refugees that are just, you know, looking for a better life and fleeing for safety. So that's refugeesinternational.org. We just did a cool World Refugees Day activation with them. And then I'd also say the Human Rights Campaign is another. I mean, I could tell a bunch of cheers, but the Human Rights Campaign is another one that is really important to me. I think it's interesting to me how many people don't realize that still in the majority of states you can be fired for denied housing and other kind of basic needs and necessities for simply for being LGBT. I think that people think that once marriage equality ruling came through that, you know, we had
that was it.
Rights. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not like that. And actually, a lot of the employers, kind of Fortune 500 brands, are ahead of in like policy than, you know, our lawmakers. But there are still the majority of states that you can be fired or denied housing or things like that.
I'm sorry. What was the group, Amanda? The Human Rights Campaign. Was there a specific organization?
Yeah, it's called the Human Rights Campaign.
Oh,
yeah,
it is. Okay.
Yeah, it's called the Human Rights Campaign. They're based here in D.C., but they do work all over the world. So they, you know, do a lot of stuff here. They're working on some stuff right now make it illegal to discriminate based on those things. So you know how you kind of have your, you know, you can't discriminate against like race, religion, sex. It would add sexual orientation and gender into that. And then the Changers of Commerce was, you know, a group of, what were we in Atlanta at Cat Cole's house, mm-hmm. right? We had like, I know there must have been music involved if we were all there. So we were probably like doing some sing-alongs. And honestly, we'd get together and just kind of talk about, you know, how we thought the world should look and behave, and we would talk about what we could do to do that. And so one night we got inspired about, we were kind of talking about practicing the more conscious form of capitalism. And so we, I think we had like outlined just by the end of that night, like a script to, you and Brandon were kind of outlined a script to a video, and just started this group of, and we went to places like, Ethiopia, which was really interesting to see, kind of Global Hope Network International, who's another organization that we're passionate about. They have this like transformative model that helps these villages become sustainable on their own, some of the poorest villages in the world. And it was really interesting to me is how that their model there in some of the poorest villages in the world, and what it took to like transform them was kind of the same as this more conscious, connected form of capitalism that that doesn't make a business's primary objective or only objective to enrich the lives of the shareholder, but also makes it, you know, connected to benefiting society and things like that. And so that's been a great, an amazing group of people. And I think that we've learned a lot. And every year at Joni and Wally from TDN2K's Global Best Practices Conference, we do a Changers of Commerce session where people kind of share how they're using their business to help to connect to society and better society and share those stories. So, yeah.
Brant, is there any doubt that Amanda's not living her authentic self?
No, I mean, look at this. None at all.
I feel very, very incompetent right now.
Well, you should.
Oh, no.
What does that mean?
If I'm being authentic, I could go through the laundry list of all my faults and where I'm.
That's a different, you know, podcast.
Bang my head, I can see. Yeah.
We've just decided to make this an hour. Let's go for
thoughts that suck. That's the podcast for that.
Amanda, how can people stay in touch with you? How can they follow you on social media and just
just to make sure that they are staying aware of what you've got going on in your life?
Yeah, sure. So, you could, on social media, Amanda Height, it's AmandaHite. That's kind of my handle on Twitter and Instagram, Amanda Height on Facebook, LinkedIn. And then, if you want to be in touch or contact me or BTC, at our website, btcrevolutions.com, there's a contact form there where you can stand, but yeah, always like to at me, hit me up in my DM box if you want, always looking to connect to more great people. If they're listening to this, I might suspect that they're probably great people.
They are. Well, listen, I can't thank you personally for spending some time with us. Brant and I were talking. We just wanted to get you as one of the early guests in here. But I love you to death for so many reasons. And I know we can't squeeze it all into the podcast. But, you know, we're just so thrilled that you took a few moments and shared your thoughts with you. And if there's anything we can ever do to help you and help prop you up, we'd be happy to do that. I don't know if you're aware, but, portion of this show is going to be going to Cannonball Kids Cancer. So that's one of the things we'll start doing, you know, focusing on pediatric cancer, which is, you know, very close to Brant's heart as well. And whether that's to our speaking engagements or some of the other stuff that will go out there, but the podcast will support that. So, you know, you've influenced us to keep fighting the good fight and supporting those that maybe don't have, the right hope. And hopefully we can do that. But thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. You all are awesome.
We'll talk to you soon. You rock.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Hey, rock stars. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to make sure you don't ever miss an episode.
And if you're interested in having Brant or me or both of us speak at your event, we're exclusively represented by Kepler Speakers, the industry's leading resource for booking conference keynotes. To start your unforgettable experience, go to keplerspeakers.com.
Until next time, rock on!
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.